This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
School of Humans. Y'all know what a Lazy Susan is, right? You know, it's that like rotating plate where you can put different foods on it and then you can spin it over to your other friends. Isn't it fun? Just like when you're sharing some small plates, maybe. Well, those became more widespread in the United States because of this one company that manufactured them called Oneida Limited. And Oneida Limited was run by a bunch of people who were in a Christian sex cult. Isn't that fun? That community was in Oneida, New York, and was known as the Oneida community. And they believed in things like, yeah, you should bang other people's husbands and wives. And also they believed in like sperm retention, all in the name of Christianity. It's justified by the Bible. And yeah, you might have heard of Oneida because they're potentially the most famous and most organized free love group that's ever existed in the United States of America. And they were preaching free love stuff in like the 1840s, way before the hippies and cults of the 1960s and 70s. Yeah, they were practicing some pretty far out ideas about sex, love, and child rearing. And don't worry, they even developed a very early form of eugenics. How fun. And it all began and centered around this dude named John Humphrey Noyce. Do you guys like this new agey kind of spacey massage music we're listening to? I thought it would be good for the sex cult. And if you don't like it, too bad. I used a lot of it in the second part of the episode. So let's get into Oneida before Oneida gets into your wife. Cue the theme song. This is American Filth. I'm Gabby Watts. Every week I tell you a filthy story from American history. This week's episode, Oneida, don't mind if you bang my wife, brother. Is that a good pun? Don't answer that. Well, let's start at the beginning, shall we? Who is this John Humphrey Noyce fellow, and how did he make this big-ass sex cult? So John Humphrey Noyce was born in Brattleboro, Vermont in 1811, and he was a baby with a silver spoon in his mouth. He came from a prominent and well-respected family. His father was in Congress for a time, and his distant cousin would become U.S. President Rutherford B. Hayes. Growing up, John was a smart kid, but he was super shy, particularly when he interacted with women. He would clam up and get all nervous, practically paralyzed when it came to interacting with members of the opposite gender. Boo, women are scary. He said, "I fully believe that I could face a battery of cannon with less trepidation than I could a room full of ladies with whom I was unacquainted." And he came from a family of shy men who lacked any riz. So what ended up happening in his family was that the dudes would either, one, marry very late in life when they were basically a death's doorstep, aka in their 40s, or two, they'd marry the only women they felt comfortable talking to, their cousins. Anyway, instead of focusing on women, John Noyes put all of his attention into education and became a star student. He attended Dartmouth College and then Harvard Law School, and everyone was like, oh my God, he's going to be such an amazing lawyer. Represent me, please. I've done some fraud. Actually, I do think I messed up on my taxes this year. But y'all don't tell on me to the IRS. But a lawyer, John Noyes was not going to be. Because while he was at Harvard, he went to a gathering of evangelicals led by a dude named Charles Finney. Who's Charles Finney, you might ask? Well, I'll tell you, but first, some context. When John Noyes went to that gathering in 1831, it was at the tail end of what is known as the Second Great Awakening. During that, there was a lot of religious reform happening all over the place. But unlike the First Great Awakening, this movement was more romantic and idealistic instead of stuffy and rigid. And Charles Finney was one of the leaders in this revival movement. He led his own congregation in Rochester, New York, and traveled around the Northeast to spread the good word. A lot of his theological ideas intersected with social reform. Like, he was into stuff like abolitionism and education for women and black people. But Mr. Finney, he also hated on a lot of his fellow revivalists. He didn't think they were being serious and just revivaling for no good reason. He coined the term burnt over district to describe the New York State region where all of these revivals were happening. He was basically like, these people are so over the top with their religious practice that no one is going to take us seriously. You're bringing down the movement. He said that there was a wild excitement passing through the region that resulted in a reaction so extensive and profound as to leave the impression on many minds that religion was a mere delusion. So, at that meeting in 1831, John Noyes showed up and basically had a conversion experience. He was like, yes, this Finney guy is super cool and progressive and smart. I want in. He was so moved that he was like, fuck the law. I must preach the good word. The Holy Spirit filled his bones and he decided a life of ministry was for him. So he abandoned law school and eventually ended up at Yale Divinity School. And as he learned more and more about God and stuff, he found that his beliefs were aligned with a group called the Perfectionists. And what the Perfectionists did is they worshipped a portrait of a woman that came to them in a vision. And the portrait represented God's most perfect soul. It was predicted that she would walk this earth starting in 1991 and start a podcast in 2023 called American Filth. That's right, it's me. The most perfect person. Just kidding, guys. I made that up. Unlike regular religion, which is definitely not made up at all. But what the perfectionists actually believed was that once you confessed your sins and subscribed to the perfectionist belief system, you became perfect, aka free from sin. They were like, the second coming of Christ already happened. In 70 AD, at the falling of Jerusalem, so we've already been absolved of all of our sins. We don't need to wait to get into heaven to connect with God. We can do that here since he's already blessed us with our presence. So yeah, we're perfect and we can do pretty much whatever we want, including give and take love freely in whatever way feels good. Well, that later part about taking love freely, that was only accepted by their freakier converts like John Noyes. When John Noyes was introduced to all of this, he was immediately hooked. He was like, sign me up. And the more he studied, the more passionate he became. But these ideas were radical. John's dad, who had also been a minister, gave him a warning. He was like, if you are to be a minister, you must think and preach as the rest of the ministers do. If you get off the traces, they will whip you in. But John was like, never. Never will I be whipped by ministers or anybody else into views that do not commend themselves to my understanding as guided by the Bible and enlightened by the Spirit. Foreshadowing. So Yale assigned John to a congregation to preach to in North Salem, New York in 1833. And while he was there, he preached about perfectionism and free love. He also fell desperately in love with a woman named Abigail Merwin. Abigail was quite beautiful with dark hair and dark eyes, and she challenged him intellectually. When they met, John was about 22 and she was 30. Gasp, a cougar in the wild. Meow. But John's dad was right. The Calvinist faculty at Yale did not like John saying all of this crazy stuff about free love. He was only in New Salem for like a year before the dudes at Yale were like, yoink, we're revoking your preacher's license. And then, in 1834, he was asked to leave Yale altogether. Damn, John Noyes was in a bad spot. And not just because he just got kicked out of Yale, but also because his relationship with Abigail, the woman he loved and one of his first converts, was over. All of this was a bit too much for Whittle John, so he went on a serious bender. That's right, he disappeared to New York City and started doing what he later described as unfashionable behavior. He was drinking heavily and passing out on street corners. But a lot of people were concerned about John, including Abigail and her brother. Even though they were broken up, she was like, someone needs to check in on that guy. He might be a danger to himself and others. During this time, Abigail married another man, which only made John Noyes descend even further. And he had a vision where he was convinced that Abigail was Satan in the costume of an angel. After this, he writes her completely off as one accursed. But eventually, her brother goes to New York and is like, okay, buddy, it's time to go home. Abigail and John were clearly never going to get back together. And despite his fear of her being Satan, he was still devastated by this. He really thought that Abigail was the person he was destined to marry. Because sometimes destiny tells you you gotta marry Satan. But alas, the Merwins dropped him off at his childhood manor in Vermont and returned to Ithaca. After a swift but grueling recovery, John returned to his dogma and once again figured if he cannot succeed in love, perhaps he can focus his energy on creating heaven on earth. No big deal. He started by convincing his siblings that perfectionism was the way. Then he began preaching his ideas around his community in Brattleboro and gathered a small following. But as he met with fellow perfectionists, he realized that no one quite got it, and his interpretation was way cooler than theirs. His take uplifted the social aspects of Christianity over the religious stuff, encouraged social agency and equity, even for women. And gradually, he solidified his own version of perfectionism. And with the same fervor that he had back in his Yale days, he called his congregation the Bible Communists. Bold, I know, but this was way before the McCarthy era when people were like, boo, communism. What Noyes was kind of meaning was that it was a commune-focused belief system where people would work together and make decisions. So yeah, all this was happening around like 1836, and John Noyes' following began to grow. But it wasn't growing quite as quickly as he wanted. Because he got going at the tail end of the Second Great Awakening, and people's fervor for perfectionism was kind of fizzling out. But he didn't care. John Noyes was digging his heels in, and in January 1837, he wrote this letter to his friend David Harrison. When the will of God is done on earth as it is in heaven, there will be no marriage. Exclusiveness, jealousy, quarreling have no place at the marriage supper of the Lamb. I call a certain woman my wife. She is yours. She is Christ, and in him, she is the bride of all saints. She is now in the hands of a stranger, and according to my promise to her, I rejoice. And like I said, his ideas were pretty out there. But he rationalized them by quoting Matthew 22:30, which says, "For in the resurrection they are neither married nor given in marriage, but are as the angels of God in heaven." Yeah, that's right. John Noyes is saying that my wife, it's not just my wife. My wife is also your wife and God's wife, and we can all have each other's wives. Wow. Now, this letter created some very serious drama for John Noyes, because his friend received the letter and, deeply inspired, sent it to a friend of his, who then sent it to another friend. And eventually, without John's knowledge or consent, his letter got distributed in a New Haven publication called The Battle Axe and Weapons of War. The editor of this publication was a perfectionist preacher named Theophilus R. Gates, and he was a fellow free love advocate looking for allies. And initially, Gates published the letter anonymously. But John, fearing that one of his fellow friends might get punished by his words, quickly claimed ownership. Gates stated that God intended for John Noyes' private thoughts to be made public because thereafter he felt that he was called to defend and ultimately carry out the communism of love. But once he claimed these ideas as his own, John Noyes was isolated yet again from a larger community of perfectionists. His ideas were too crazy, too far out, but he didn't back down. He kept writing letters and pamphlets and other shit. And he had an unwavering belief in himself and his interpretation. He even started his own paper called The Witness for a time. But as a lot of people excluded him, a lot of people were like, "Hey, I like what you're saying. I'm going to follow you." In 1838, John Noyes got married to a woman named Harriet Holton. She was one of his earliest and most loyal followers. And everyone was like, "Yay, John, you've overcome your shyness and got over Abigail and found a wife, huzzah!" And he was like, "You think that's cool? Just wait until you hear about Bible communism. It's gonna blow your mind." Ladies, don't you hate it when your husband talks about Bible communism on your wedding day? And things got really heated up after he and Harriet got married. The story goes like this. They were friends with this other couple. Their names were George and Mary Cragen. And what happened is one day Harriet and the husband George were on an innocent little stroll. But when they're on the walk, they discovered that they were extremely attracted to each other. George reported later that it was nearly impossible to resist Harriet. And then when Harriet mentioned this to her husband, John Noyes was like, "What a coincidence. I am super hot for George's wife, Mary." And they basically became a polyamorous quadruple. I don't know what it's called, quartet. And they realized that this was the way. This is the path towards true happiness. Christian swinging. Their neighbors, on the other hand, were appalled. They were like, "Ew, gross. You're supposed to just be with your own wife or your own husband. Why are you guys mixing and matching? This is disgusting." But then it just escalated from there. The Noyes and the Cragens invited even more couples into their Christian swingers club, or what John Noyes and his followers were calling it, complex marriage. And this became a fundamental tenet of John Noyes' version of perfectionism. It was a rebellion against the ownership implications of marriage at the time, and implied that everyone in the congregation was essentially married to everyone else in the congregation. And to be clear, they weren't doing any group sex, okay? This wasn't like a gangbang orgy situation. It was just doing switcheroos amongst the couples. So you guys don't get any crazy ideas. And the idea of complex marriage went even beyond just sex. What it also said was that men and women should also share labor and property. So John Noyes' free love congregation was going strong in Vermont. Until one day, those neighbors decided that they had had enough of these free love people littering on their property all the time and doing all this nasty sex. So they called the cops on John Noyes. 911, what's your emergency? Polyamory. Ah! Though I guess phones weren't invented yet, so I guess the neighbors just went outside and screamed until the police came. I don't know how it used to work. And yeah, I could look it up, but it's more fun to imagine someone outside screaming about polyamory until the cops come.
Please, someone help me. They're being polyamorous again. Ah!
But anyway, in 1847, John Noyes was arrested for adultery. And this set a fire under his ass to take his followers and his Bible communism to the next level. We'll be back after these soothing advertisements.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
When John Humphrey Noyes got out of jail, he was like, fuck Vermont, I'm going to go to the burnt-over district, buy me some land. And he was like, who's going with me? And a bunch of people were like, yeah, you know what? We're with you. Let's go. So John Noyes and his followers moved to a property in Oneida, New York. At first, this group was vigorously determined to create heaven on earth, just as John Noyes envisioned it. At this point, he was considering himself a prophet, a messenger of God who knows right from wrong, and was placed on this planet to lead his followers to Eden. So at Oneida, they stuck to the ideals he decreed, all of which were justified in the Bible, of course. Yeah, Jesus told me to be a swinger. And like I promised, here is when we are transitioning into some more new age, massagey, culty music. Like I promised. So the Oneida property eventually held almost 300 people. And other smaller, Noyesian communities were popping up too. But Oneida was the epicenter. And some of you might be thinking, wow, a man calling himself a prophet, nothing can go wrong there. But first, let's hear John Noyes out. Let's talk about some of his prophetic decrees. There was the complex marriage, which we talked about. But now that they actually had a property, the equal sharing of labor and land became fully realized. They had plenty to go around. And all the decisions at Oneida were now made by a 27-person committee that was divided up into 48 administrative sections. And with all the manual labor that went into building the property, get this, Women were even allowed to wear pants. Wow! Another thing they were doing at Oneida was called mutual criticism, where basically your personality was evaluated by the entire community. Every so often, you were required to stand before everyone you know and hear about your flaws. And the goal of these events weren't to develop comedic roasting chops, but to eliminate undesirable character traits. Even John Noyes himself was subject to criticism from the group. But let's get back to the sex, shall we? Another major thing going on at Oneida was called male continence, also known as coitus reservatus. Yeah, fellas, if you're at Oneida, you gotta reserve that coitus. Basically, what it meant was that men weren't supposed to ejaculate during sex. John Noyes was like, just because you can have lots of sex with whoever you want, that doesn't mean you get to go around coming all over the damn place. We can't afford that many babies. Plus, maybe the women don't want them. In some of the many pamphlets that he wrote about male continence, he warned that ejaculation drains men's vitality and leads to disease. He also reminded his community that pregnancy and birth levied a heavy tax on the vitality of women. A lot of this was inspired by his wife, because before they moved to Oneida and before they even started having their Christian swingers group, Harriet had 5 extremely traumatic birth experiences, and in 4 of those, the baby died. This showed John the great toll that childbearing can take on a woman's body, mind, and her spirit. And he was like, holy shooters. No woman should have to experience that against her will. So John and Harriet, and thus the rest of the community, emphasized male continence as birth control, noting that it was natural and healthy and created deeply intimate relationships. It also became a highly valued social asset within the group. The men who were the best at not coming were held in high regard at the Oneida community. So if you're part of the no-fap movement going on now, why don't you get in a time machine and go back in time? Yeah, go hang out with the people at Oneida and stop bothering the rest of us. And apparently this male continence strategy did work. Between 1848 and 1868, that's 20 whole years, there were only 12 unplanned pregnancies. Aren't you guys just loving this new agey music? Well, now it's time for another track that's a little bit more ominous and sinister sounding, because if you can believe it, some of the dudes didn't like male continence. In some of John Noyes' letters, he said that there was some antisocial withdrawal from the community for some of the men. You know, some of the boys didn't want to be involved in Oneida once they learned they couldn't cummy-wummy in a lady. In fact, one of the people who was part of Oneida was Charles Guiteau, who was the dude who shot President James Garfield. And maybe he was pissed off because he was like, if I had been able to come more at Oneida, I wouldn't have to shoot the president. Ah, what a guy. But yeah, he was eventually kicked out of Oneida. Because remember, they called him Charles Get Out because he was so creepy. And he failed one of those like character assessments that they did. Male continence aside, though, Oneida, some people saw it as a utopia. But, again, it's a commune with sex stuff going on. So obviously, it got a little weird. For example, they started a eugenics experiment called stirpiculture. Derived from the Latin word stirps, which means stalk, stern, or root, 53 women and 38 men agreed to take part in this project that was designed to create more spiritually and physically perfect children. Community members who wished to be parents were evaluated before a committee and matched based on their moral and spiritual qualities. John Noyes was like, yes, let's create the most perfect perfectionist babies. And the experiment yielded 58 children, 9 of whom were fathered by John Noyes. And once the children were born, they breastfed for a while, staying with their mother for the first 15 months of their life. But once they were weaned, they were intentionally raised communally instead of just by their biological parents. In the early years, they returned to their mothers in the evening to sleep in their beds, But then the children were kind of rotated, sleeping with other adults to prevent any attachment that might interrupt the communal commitment. Community mothers and fathers were assigned the job of childcare in a children's wing of the community's mansion. And eventually, the children moved to an entirely separate house, surrounded by guidance and support from multiple adults. And this reflected another practice that was at the core of living in Oneida. It's called non-attachment. At Oneida, it was frowned upon for anyone to get too close to anyone else. They thought if a mother had too much attachment to her child, this would cause illness or suffering on both her and the child's part. This was also true for romantic couples. Despite being encouraged to share intimacy, coupling was discouraged, as it was seen as a conflict of interest to the common good. Members of Oneida were expected to maintain a sense of autonomy and independence. And are you guys ready for Oneida to sound even more culty? And not just culty, but also just like really bad? Great. Cue the even more ominous New Age music. So at Oneida, women over 40 were required to act as sexual mentors to adolescent boys who were training for male continence. Yep, 40-year-old women, adolescent boys. And what about the young girls at Oneida? Well, they were often introduced to sex by older men. Isn't that great? So nice of these old men to offer their services. And in general at Oneida, women were empowered to sleep with anyone and everyone, whoever they wanted. And certainly to turn down men if they didn't want to sleep with those guys. Like in Oneida, they actually focused on female orgasms. But the thing is, there are reports from people who lived at Oneida that said turning down John Noyce himself wasn't an option. And the whole non-attachment thing, well, when it comes to cults, that's a classic tactic to isolate individuals so they don't have the opportunity to ask each other questions about the true morality of what is happening to them and around them. But anyway, let's do some more chipper New Age music for the end. So yeah, Oneida, certainly some moral question marks surrounding the whole thing. Still, when historians look back at Oneida, it's often cited as an extremely successful utopian community, especially for its time. Their woodworking business became so popular at one point that they had to hire outside of the community. Imagine the looks on those guys' faces who thought they got a sweet gig building tables, but turned out they were just working at a swingers resort. And the Oneida community made money, even thrived, from 1848 until 1879. But after John Noyce passed the community to his son Theodore, the group splintered. Theodore lacked his father's fervor and talent for leadership. The community was under constant scrutiny by the outside world, and many members of the younger generations wanted to enter into exclusive marriages and live a more culturally acceptable life. This division also brought about a very justified debate about when children should be initiated into sex and by whom. These arguments deepened the cracks. Yeah, you fucks, you shouldn't sleep with kids. The last straw came in June of 1879, because John Noyce was informed that he was about to be arrested. Clergy from the surrounding areas decided he should go to prison for statutory rape, so he fled to Canada and never returned to the United States. He dissolved his life's work in a letter a few months later, writing to his followers saying, "It was time to abandon the practice of complex marriage and live more traditionally." And the community was formally dissolved in January of 1881. And converted into one of the first joint stock companies in the United States. Some of the Oneida members followed John Noyce to Canada, and there he remained a powerful leader for a small few. He died on April 13, 1886, and then his body was returned to the Oneida property, and he was buried alongside many of his followers. And the thing is, guys, the Oneida house, this big mansion, it still stands today. So it'd be a great trip for you and your swinging group. As always, we learn a lesson from American Filth, and I think the lesson we learn here today is that if you are a shy man who can't get any puss, just start a cult where people are required to sleep with you. I was about to say cue the credits, but first we gotta listen to the rest of this new age music fade out. Ooh, I don't want to join a cult. Say it after me. Ooh, I don't want to join a cult. Ooh, say it after me. I don't want to join a cult. Oops, tricked ya. You're in my cult now. American Filth is a production of School of Humans and iHeart Podcast. This episode was hosted and sound designed by me, Gabby Watts. It was written by Julia Kriskow. Jesse Neiswanger wrote the theme song along with me, and our executive producers are Virginia Prescott, Elsie Crowley, and Brandon Barr. You can follow along with the show at American Filth Pod on Instagram, and make sure to give us a review, some stars, wherever you listen to podcasts. All right, I hope you all have a wonderful Wednesday or whatever day of the week it is you're listening to this. Peace and blessings to you all.
School of Humans.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles ready for next day installation and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cb for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Tanner girl go shopping.
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.